Famine, you know. I mean, who wants to see that? You know, I mean, it's.
But it's not just people dying or people suffering.
You know,
there are all sorts of other things in the film that, even in the early part, I would say, there are amusing touches, because this character of this man, this Brahmin, who sits in Sutap as a teacher, as a priest, and
pompous,
everything,
yes,
a very pompous, sort of amusing character. And that's the whole point, you see. There are amusing things happening in the early part of the film, but later, when the famine comes, and really when the realization grows that this is, you know, we're going to have to face a very disturbing sort of future, then things begin to change. And then, of course, I end the film with the first debt from famine, from lack of food, and with the realization of the people that people can die of hunger even when there has been a good harvest. So that is the point where I end the film. I don't let it go beyond that and show thousands of people die.
Yes.
And that was the whole point. I wanted to make the point.
Hello and welcome back to Parte Que Piche, or PKP, a podcast dedicated to exploring Indian cinema from a critical lens. I'm Raisa Faruqi, and...
Hi, I'm Ankur Desai.
And we're your hosts for today's episode. Ankur, want to tell the fine people what we're talking about today?
Yeah, so far we've talked a lot about Hindi cinema and focused it on Bollywood cinema so much. So obviously we both know that, just like there's not just one state in India, there's also a lot of different regional cinemas. And when you talk to people that aren't Indian about Indian cinema, they'll usually mention Bollywood, but so some of the cinephiles will mention someone like Satyajit Ray. And Satyajit Ray, amongst many other filmmakers, hails from the state of Bengal and made all of his films in Bengali. So we decided the obvious thing to do is explore Bengali cinema.
Yeah, it's I personally only really knew Satyajit Ray, just because that's what we studied. And I guess, being Hindi... a Hindi speaker, like, I only really knew much about, like, Hindi cinema. So, very interesting topic to explore today.
Yeah, I think that's similar to me, because, I mean, I grew up in India, so there was definitely a lot of, like, talk about Satyajit Ray. A lot of it was how, like, both from a very nationalistic angle, because it's like, oh, this well-known filmmaker from India. It wasn't really about his films, because his films weren't shown, I would say, like, on regular television channels, because all of his films aren't really the best things to be shown on, like, mainstream television. And when people are more accustomed to, like, Bollywood cinema, it was very rare to, like, come across a film screening or a film being shown on television of Satyajit Ray's. And yeah, but at the same time, everyone knows that name very well in India. That if you mention that name, people know who you're talking about, and they know what type of films he made.
Yeah, Satyajit Ray, and I think Bengali cinema in general, has this I guess stereotype of being like upper class, very
very, like, urban focused, right?
Or like, it's like only smart people or cinephiles would watch it.
I think that's definitely true.
And I like, I'm curious why that is. So that's, I think, part of what we're gonna explore today. So do you want to run through the let's start from the beginning.
So of course Satyajit Ray isn't the only prominent filmmaker from Bengal, but I think he's a good introduction or a way to, like, understand Bengali cinema, because he's so prominent and so, like, well known. So just give a little bit of historical context of Bengal, especially their city of Kolkata. West Bengal is just it's a state in the eastern India. It's again, like, its capital city is Kolkata, and Kolkata as is known as like a very cultured, very historically significant, very artistic, academic
metropolitan
city. And it's also, when it comes to its history, is very important because it's a port city, so it had a lot of connections to trade, migration, and a lot of the kingdoms that ruled over India, they had used it as a spot to kind of, again, use it for migration and trade.
Mm-hmm.
Its location, it's like right underneath the Himalayan mountains, and it's connected to the Bay of Bengal. And due to this, it was like considered to be an entreport of the Silk Route. So it was a really important place, significantly. During the British Raj, it was the capital city,
mm-hmm.
because, again, like all these...
It would be like a primary trading post, yep. Hey?
That's true. And during this time, it's became not only the capital, but also was like the location at which a lot of like infamous like injustices happened during the British Raj. The first one that I came across was the destruction of the handloom industry. That's where a lot of like clothing and silks were produced, and like the craft of it was very like specific to Bengal, and it was very well known throughout the world. And when the British Raj showed up, they kind of destroyed it to make things easier for them to sell. It's also the state where the Bengal famine happened, which was something started by Winston Churchill's government to like assist the world war effort at the time. And yeah, so a lot of things. It's a very important city, and like we were mentioning, it's like Bengal itself is like very stereotypically seen as a very cultured state, mm-hmm. and very progressive state.
I think for me, like when I think Bengal, I think yes, Satyajit Ray, and also like the Tagore family, which is like arts.
Yeah, exactly. Their Tagore family, they have history dating back to like almost 300 years or so, and they've had like a sort of say in Indian and Bengali culture and art.
Mm-hmm.
Their most famous, I guess you could say, family member is Rabindranath Tagore, and he's probably the most prominent poet, writer, literary figure from India. He most famously renounced getting knighthood from the queen at the time. Yeah. Obviously, he wanted to support India and the independence struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And he's also a winner of the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1913.
Yeah.
And also, he's very well known in India for writing the national anthem,
mm-hmm.
not just for India, but also for Bangladesh as well. So, and he was very prolific because he wrote novels, he wrote plays, short stories, poems.
And that became big, not just in India, but
for sure.
All over the world.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the main reasons everyone remembers him is because of the prolific nature of his work, but also just the quality of it.
Mm-hmm.
In Bengal, definitely like the music of it, you'll come across like what's called Rabindra Sangeet, and those are basically his poems, I believe, or some original songs that have been adapted to like make it more accessible, mm-hmm. and also really like beautiful poems and songs.
Yeah.
Again, Qazi Nazrul Islam, who you could say is like a parallel to Tagore, but like from Bangladesh. So he was also very like discussed like struggles of revolution, but also he was definitely focused on like devotion to God. So very like famous person in Bangladesh. Mm-hmm. Also, Bengal is the home of the Bengal Renaissance, yeah. Of course. This like spawned a lot of personalities and visionaries, such as Swami Vivekanandan, who is a spiritual leader, Ram Mohan Roy, who was also a freedom fighter struggle. Ram Mohan Roy was considered the father of modern India. He was definitely involved in banning child marriage and sati.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like considered the father of modern India for those reasons, and amongst others for like helping the struggle of British for independence from British.
Yeah.
And of course Tagore was also part of that.
Yeah. It's interesting, like there's so much, I don't know, knowledge and like all these very mm-hmm. interesting figures. It's like, why Bengal? Like, what about Bengal? Like, I know it was like a very left-leaning state. Yeah,
that's right.
I don't know if that's why everyone just
I think a lot of the one reason I came across it is that because it's like a tourist spot, it's like it's so connected to the world,
right?
The yeah. trade and stuff.
Yeah.
But I feel like it's maybe diminishing, or maybe it's just you're looking at one angle of it by saying, oh, because it's connected to the world, there's a lot of knowledge
yeah.
flowing through it. But at the same time, I'm trying to think like if there's other reasons to it.
Yeah.
But it's not definitely a wrong answer, yeah. I'd say. Like, of course, if you're connected to the world, you're obviously going to get a lot of like yeah, books, a lot of like
yeah, literature. Expand your knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's what happened to Satyajit Ray. We'll talk about
yeah.
later, but for yeah. sure.
Academically also, like, if you, this is like a stereotype, if you're from Bengal, you're just naturally smart.
Yeah.
But I've met like stupid Bengali people, so maybe not true. Bengal is like the home to IIT Kharagpur and IIM Kolkata, which were the first IITs and IIMs made in past British rule India, like post-independence India. And IIT and IIMs are like the most prestigious universities you can get into and like study at, because like the scope after joining those places are huge.
Yeah.
And it's like very competitive and very tough. So
yeah.
And also it's home to many other research facilities and universities regarding to arts, history, science.
It's like the Montreal of
yeah, you can say that.
The Montreal kind of India. Well, like yeah. in state
yeah.
state version of it. Yeah.
For sure.
That's, yeah.
And like you were mentioning, it's a very left leaning state. From like 1977 to 2014, the state legislative assembly was controlled by what's called the Bam Front, which is like the left front of Bengal.
Mm.
It was basically a coalition of left-leaning parties.
Okay.
Very various, like different, like democratic, socialist, communist, Maoist parties. However, like as mentioned, like 2014, their influence waned a little, and there are various reasons why scholars say that happened. But due to this, like the number of seats they occupied and the influence they had over people just diminished over time. So,
but
it's still, I think, like a lot of people do consider Bengal to be a left-leaning state. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, even now, like that's the place to be here. Yeah, left-leaning. So, in terms of like Bengali cinema, so I know this the at least that's what they say, the Lumiere brothers film, the first film, like I guess shown in India, was in Calcutta. And I think you're right, it's probably because of the it was a trading post, like easily accessible. Yeah,
exactly. I think so. 1895 is when the Lumiere brothers show it in France, in Paris, and then after that it traveled all over the world I think it went to Mumbai first in India.
Oh, okay, which also, I guess, is a port.
But, again, it's like, it happened in the same year, so it wasn't, like, too far off.
Yeah.
So, usually it's dated to, like, Bengal's first, like, screening of, like, motion pictures, I guess you could say, was the Lumiere Brothers in 1896. However, there are, like, some conflicting reports. Renita Chatterjee, in her article Cinema in the Colonial City, notes her research, the first screening probably happened in 1897.
Oh, okay.
As opposed to 1896. But there's also a lot of reports saying 1896 is like the first one. So not really sure, but like, so 96.
In that era.
Yeah, exactly. Those 2 years.
Yeah,
yeah, and I think like any other place in the world, theater and cinema is like very connected, both for exhibition wise and like the artistic representation wise.
Mm-hmm.
And Bengal is no different. Some of like the theaters in Kolkata were like the first places where they showed films. Theaters like Theater Royal, Star Theater, Minerva Theater, and Classic Theater were like the first venues where these motion pictures were shown.
Mm-hmm.
And influential theater owners like Amendranath Datta of Classic Theater encouraged Hiralal Sen, who was considered the first indigenous Bengali filmmaker, to film his plays and kind of show them along with the plays that he was putting on.
Oh,
so,
okay.
So yeah, very like fascinating.
Hmm.
Yeah, very fascinating like connection, which is, I think we see it all over the world, and I think we definitely talked about it in like our first few episodes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of Hiralal Sen, he's considered like the first indigenous Bengali filmmaker because he made films. Obviously they weren't sound films, but he was the first one to kind of go around Kolkata and just filming regular day activities, like people walking in the port.
Realism.
Yeah, realism.
Yeah.
And which is like, it just reminds me a lot of like Lumiere Brothers, like,
yeah,
were the first films they made of like people just walking out of the factory,
yeah,
or just people hanging out in a park or whatever. So Hiralal Sen is kind of an extension of that.
Yeah. That's interesting because, like you said, so Lumiere Brothers showed their film, mm-hmm, in Mumbai and Calcutta around the same time.
Yeah.
But it's interesting where the filmmakers in those two places went with that, because in Mumbai, we talked about in previous episodes, they started filming like Indian plays,
mm-hmm,
which, you know, had like musical components, yeah, and stuff, which we said like influenced Bollywood. But then here you have a filmmaker who is just going around showing day-to-day life,
mm-hmm,
and that's how it started. And I don't know, maybe there's like some,
yeah,
reason like behind like why Bengali cinema started following in that footstep, because that's how,
yeah,
and they just started doing it like that.
Yeah, Bengali, like, because of the stereotype of them being very cultured and very like socially conscious,
mm-hmm,
there's always this idea of that Bengalis like it, like they like being shown real life and social realism in their, whether it's their theater, whether it's their literature, and whether it's their films. So it does make sense why Hiralal Sen would go around filming day-to-day realities as opposed to like just putting plays onto film.
Yeah.
So yeah, Hiralal Sen, of course, extending that social realism, he made the first he made a documentary on anti-partition activities happening in 1905. This isn't related to the partition that happened in 1947. This is more related to a 1905, like, British rule, like, law to make, separate Bengal, mm-hmm, into, like, Bangladesh, for the first time around.
But, okay.
Didn't really research into too much, but that was sort of what was happening.
Yeah.
Sen is also considered the first ad filmmaker. He made films, like little advertisements on CK Sen's Jabba Kusum Air Oil and Butter Crystal's Edwards Tonic.
Wow.
So, guy was making anti-partition films and
gotta make making money somehow.
Exactly.
Do the hustle.
Yeah, the struggle. Yeah. So, yeah, when it comes to film exhibition, the story of Jamshedji Framji Madan is the most prominent story. And he made the first ever tent cinema in Kolkata. It was basically made in Kolkata Maidan, which is also known as Maidan in Kolkata. Basically, it was like, it's a giant park that houses a lot of social clubs, a lot of sporting venues like the Kolkata Race Course and Eden Gardens, which is like one of the biggest like cricket stadiums in India. And so he basically created a tent cinema where filmmakers like Hiralal Sen would show their films, and he would also show like international pictures and basically any films really. And but his story doesn't just stop there. He also created the first purpose-built cinema hall. It was called the Elphinstone Picture Palace, and it was built in either 1907 or 1908.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, when it comes to exhibition, Jamshedji Framji Madan's story is pretty important. And it's an interesting thing is related to the Parsi angle we talked about in the first episode, mm-hmm. because J.F. Madan is Parsi and he was born in Mumbai.
Oh, okay.
So it's very interesting to see like that Parsi connection once again,
mm-hmm.
coming into
yeah.
Indian film history.
Hmm. So that was like the kind of silent films, the beginning. Mm-hmm. So what was the transition like to, I guess, the talkies?
A lot of scholars or writers mentioned that there was the transition that happened didn't bring a lot of experimentation, and they were just sort of repurposed silent films made into sound films.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, it seems like, you know, like obviously the sound films in Bollywood or Hindi cinema, they mm-hmm. took it like a whole different direction,
yeah,
as we know. But then here they're again just showing like more real, yeah, real sure. life just on screen. Sound doesn't yeah. really matter.
Yeah, they were definitely making stories that were adaptions of mythological stories,
mm-hmm.
Like even folk tales, but they were also adapting works by Rabindranath Tagore and Satyachandra Chatterjee and Bankim Chandra Chatterjee, like who are all these great writers of yeah. Bengal, and they're just adapting their stories.
Yeah.
So there's definitely the social realism aspect of it. Shantanu Ray Chaudhary, who was writing for Projector Head, which is this journal in India dedicated to Indian cinema and Indian history. He noticed that there are some standouts, of course. The first one is Chandidas by Devaki Bose, released in 1932. It was like a breakthrough film of sound recording,
mm-hmm.
and especially with the use of background music. P.C. Barrow's Devdas, which was like one of the first sound adaptions of Devdas. It's like a very popular novel
yeah.
that has been adapted quite a few times.
Quite a few.
That was also made in the talkie mm-hmm. eras.
1935?
Yeah, that's right. And it was commended for the parallel cutting and bringing that melodrama to Indian cinema,
mm.
which makes a lot of sense considering the story.
Yeah.
And the final one that Chaudhary talked about is Nitin Bose's Bhagya Chakra, which introduced playback singing to Indian cinema.
Okay, so Bengali cinema actually started
yeah.
that. Mm, very interesting. So yeah, like even though there's such a difference between Bollywood and Bengali cinema, there are correlations mm-hmm. with like Devdas, Spring Innocence, that like melodrama, mm-hmm. and then the playback scene from Nathan Bose's film, which I didn't realize.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah. I thought it was like a Bombay cinema, like probably started it.
Yeah,
but
we were wrong.
Yeah, but they sort of focus on adaptions of Tagore stories and what have you, and like mythological stories. These films didn't stand out compared to the Hollywood films that were being produced at the time. Mm. And a lot of them did not focus on the hardships and like social realism that would come to define Bengali cinema.
Yeah.
Of course, like Ritwik Ghatak, Mrinal Sen, Satyajit Ray, all these people, they came and like kind of defined Bengali cinema as that, especially like in an Indian film context.
Yeah.
But when the talkie started, it didn't. This yeah. didn't come in first.
Yeah, but I think it also has to do like with the like historical political context at the mm-hmm. time, because the real tumultuous time comes in like the 40s and 50s. Yeah,
for sure.
And I think, you know, we've said it many times, like out of the most tumultuous times comes the best art.
For sure. And that's a very agreeable statement, I think, because during the 40s, when like you have the World War II going on, you have a lot of upheaval in India in general due to British Raj control and like basically being close to authoritarian rule,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of racism, a lot of like a lot of problems that are happening, like the Bengal famine.
Yeah.
So, and due to that, there's a lot of like cinema that try to reflect that, and definitely like the 40s and 50s is considered a like a paradigm shift in the attitude of cinema, and like stylistically also, like filmmakers at this time in Bengal are seeing that kind of making canned theater, or like just which basically means like filmed theater, isn't really cutting it.
Mm-hmm.
So they started kind of making more cinematic ways of telling stories, cinematic way of acting, and like addressing the social realities. So
yeah,
you're definitely right. The biggest film that came out that kind of talked about like these issues of both like cinematic representation and social realism is Udayar Bhatte, released in 1944, and it was also an introduction to the Progressive Writers Association and artists from IPTA, which mm-hmm. we talked about earlier.
Yeah,
them coming into like Indian cinema, and more specifically Bengali cinema.
Communism so, strikes again.
I know, right? Yeah, so like filmmakers like Mrinal Sen and Ritwik Ghatak, they dreamed of changing the way films were made. So, which is very obvious when you watch their films.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it's you are definitely seeing like, because of the mess that's going around the world, filmmakers want to show that or trying to channel that anger or frustration into the cinemas mm-hmm. they're making.
Yeah. Now, this is also the era where Satyajit Ray
mm-hmm.
really pops up on the screen.
Yeah.
So he was born in Calcutta in 1921. And then in, I believe, 1947, he founded or co-founded the Calcutta Film Society.
Mm-hmm.
And as past Film Society members yeah. of our university, we're like, yeah.
Yes.
It's awesome.
Finally.
But they showed, like, I don't know, cool films outside, you know, the norm. Apparently, so he was friends with American GIs who were based in Calcutta during, like, World War II, and they told him about American films. So that's how he was getting the news. So again, yeah, I guess being, like, you know, a port really does help. Apparently, like, he went to, where did he go? He went to, I think it was London, where he saw, okay. So apparently he went to London and he saw this little known film called Bicycle Thieves, a neorealist film, and fell in love with it and was like, I'm going to make movies like that. And so he went back to India. And then, yeah, I don't know whether he saw that film before starting the Calcutta Film Society or if it was after. But regardless, he was there, and then the French filmmaker Jean Renoir came to India to direct The River, and Ray helped scout some locations for him and told Renoir about his idea to adapt this book, Pather Panchali, into a movie. How he got interested in Pather Panchali was he was working in like a press publishing factory. Yeah, he did it with a super small team. He did like most of the editing and casting and yeah, all that stuff, and made Pather Panchali.
Yeah, definitely. I was going to mention, like, because of his location in Calcutta or Kolkata, that he got access to such resources. Like,
he knew people.
Yeah, he knew people. Yeah.
His grandfather actually started a printing press, and I guess was like, it was very big press, and perhaps still is. I'm not too sure. Yeah, I'm sure like they were pretty like well known, and yeah, like were able to get stuff done with like the small resources they had as a film. Yeah, but so Pather Panchali came out in 1955, and it won the inaugural Best Human Document Award at the 1956 Cannes Film Festival. And it's, I mean, now, like, it's shown in the film, all Film Studies 101 classes. It's really what put him on the world map and put, I think, Indian film on the world map.
I think it's like his most popular one too.
Yeah.
Because even a lot of filmmakers in the West, especially like someone like Martin Scorsese, constantly mentions that film.
Yeah.
It's like, it's very fascinating to hear someone like Martin Scorsese rave about the film. And if you like study Martin Scorsese, even on like a surface level, you kind of understand why he's drawn to a movie like Pather Panchali and like the trilogy in general, or like Ray's work in general.
I think like Satyajit Ray's films have like, they are neorealist, but it's like a really I don't know how to say it, like introspective neorealism, because it's not like it's always like about an individual character really, and like their inner thoughts and whatever. And it's not just like Pather Panchali or the rest of the Apu trilogy. I think this theme is in like all his films, that it's like he's able to move the story and like the camera and everything, and you're really able to get into the character's head and mindset, and the external factors in the scene help kind of show what is going on internally, which I hadn't like really never been done before. I would say in Indian cinema specifically, and I think is why Ray is regarded as such a, you know, influential filmmaker.
To talk about that, the movie I watched for this episode, Nayak, is really about that. It's about one person, Uttam Kumar's character. He's like a matinee idol, like a film star in Bengali cinema, and it's his journey on a story level. It's his journey to go to Delhi and accept this award, but at the same time the movie shows his thought process, and it goes into his dreams, into his past, because he's just recounting his story mm-hmm. to a journalist. And it's like, it's so important for him to show like one person's struggle of like dealing with himself, which is kind of different to Pathar Panchali, but you can see the parallels there running.
Well, I think even Pathar Panchali, it like is always, if you take it as the trilogy, it's always like about how he grows from, you know, mm-hmm. this, you know, poor kid to a very sensitive man by the third film. But same, I saw the movie Jalsaghar, which is regarded as, like, it's not as well known worldwide, but when I was reading about it, it's like well regarded as one of mm-hmm. his best films, and I loved it. Like I remember I saw Pathar Panchali first when I was 18 years old, and like didn't really like it too much. It was boring. Like mm-hmm. I don't watch it, but I don't know. Jalsaghar, it's like, so it's about this guy, zamindar, which basically, like, how would you describe someone? They're like landlord.
Person who owns land. Like, zamin is land. So
So this was like a system in India where you would have the tenants paying the guy for mm-hmm. Like a landlord. But this system was eventually abolished, I think, in like the 50s. But the story of Jalsaghar, which I guess the English translation is music room. Mm-hmm. It's about a zamindar who is he's clinging on to his way of mm-hmm. life, even though everything around him is falling, and he clings on at all costs, whatever the cost is. His way of life being having these like lavish musical and dance performances in his house, and you know, being noble. So it's like this fight between like the artistic and beautiful, lavish life versus like modern India. But again, like even like it is like it shows external things happening, but it's really centered on this one mm-hmm. guy. And I think even if though it is like this one person, you're really seeing in his story, you can draw so much from it about like how India in itself is changing mm-hmm. or Bengal.
That's I definitely even saw that in Nayak, because the film is focused on Uttam Kumar's character, but this train ride that he's taking, obviously there's more people on the train, and it definitely goes to these stories every now and then. There's a ad executive or an ad person on the train as well, who's trying to score a big client who's also taking the same train ride. And there's a like kind of funny, tragic story with that, because the guy that the ad man is trying to woo kind of is not interested really. Mm-hmm. He's kind of just like whatever to it. But as soon as the admin's wife comes to like just sit with her husband, the guy's all of a sudden like really interested.
Yeah.
Like, he's interested in his wife, but, and so the admin is trying to use his wife, be like, hey, he's just trying to like flirt with you, just give him a little attention and whatnot. And she's clearly uncomfortable with it. But it's just really fascinating to see Ray go from this interior story of Uttam Kumar's character and go to like this bigger case of like a female's experience in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very fascinating to see him do it so effortlessly, and so like it just flows so well. So
that's a big thing of his films, is like this flow
mm-hmm.
In regards to like whether it's the like a shift between the characters or like a theme or something, it like mm-hmm. flows really well. Mm-hmm. Sharmila Tagore, she was in another of his later films too.
Yeah, that's right.
Devi?
Yeah, I think it's called
Devi, yeah. But I haven't seen any of the later films, but apparently he focuses a lot on like a woman's experience. Mm-hmm.
Like another of his films is Charulata, and that one's definitely focused on a woman's experience in a sort of loveless marriage. So he definitely is very like fascinated with women's treatment in society. And of course Satyajit Ray is a man, so it's definitely his view of things, so it's not perfect or even the best representation. But it's always like fascinating to see that in Indian cinema in general.
Which you even now still don't really get. It's a different context than like
for sure.
American cinema or Canadian cinema. Like we can't say that Satyajit Ray didn't have a influence on Bengali cinema, because he did, and world cinema too. And I think with him and like the Calcutta Film Society, that really kind of cemented what we think is Bengali cinema. So I guess, yeah, what happened, you know, past the 50s and 60s?
Yeah, so like during the 50s and 60s, like you had Satyajit Ray, you had Ritwik Ghatak, and you had Mrinal Sen kind of on the art side of the film industry. They were making their films that were very personal, very political, very socially conscious, but at the same time, and also very experimental and artistic. But at the same time, you had like commercial wing of Bengali cinema, and this was like considered like the golden era of when Bengali cinema like had a giant control of Bengali audience. Like I was mentioning, Uttam Kumar, who was in Nayak, plays the main character. He was like the star of this era. It's like very fascinating to watch Nayak based on that reading. But he was also joined by stars like Suchitra Sen, Sumitra Chatterjee, Chubby Biswas, Tulsi Chakraborty, Anil Chatterjee, and filmmakers like Asit Sen, Tapan Sinha. You know, they were also making like creative pieces.
Chubby Biswas was the lead. He played the zamindar in Jalsaghar. And he did a great job.
That's nice. Even Uttam Kumar in Nayak is really good, and he plays a hero who's very confident and very like privileged, but at the same time there's a lot of guilt with the character, and because he's reminiscing of the mistakes he's made and the failures of being a human being, and he plays both so well, you believe both, you never for a second doubt that, oh, I've done bad in life. Like, you never doubt that. You know it's true. After this, so the 80s, so like the 70s and 80s is when Bengali cinema is in a sort of decline.
I even say like late 60s.
Yeah, exactly.
Going into 70s, yeah.
Yeah, that's when it started, and like a lot of scholars noticed that there was attention in terms of audience participation was going more towards Bollywood cinema and like the more masala films. Even though like the budgets were smaller for Bengali films, they still couldn't match up to say like Bollywood films, Hollywood films, and like international films in general. So, and the, you know, middle class days, they didn't want to watch like non-colored things, like in terms, because most of the films are being made in black and white, so they'd rather just stay home and watch TV, or go to the bigger cinematic fair of like Bollywood,
which had the money to like have color film and all that fun stuff.
And also like Uttam Kumar died in 1980, so like the biggest star of Bengali cinema, it's just gone all of a sudden. So there were a lot of reasons why Bengali audiences were moving towards non-Bengali cinema.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I definitely think it's like that Bombay cinema had a big impact that...
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's like more like the economics of mm-hmm. Bombay cinema, how they took over most of India.
Yeah, for sure. I think because of this, the Bengali like companies, they saw urban cinema goers weren't interested, so they started focusing on more like the rural hinterland mm-hmm. of non-urban middle class audiences. So they just like distributed the films into smaller theaters in like the smaller districts because they'd make their money back.
Yeah.
And of course it's a business, so they took that. And due to this, the social realism, the sort of artistic film industry got hit hard. But Satyajit Ray and Mrinal Sen, they kept making films, but the hold that they had on Bengali audiences kind of waned.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
And even the type of stories that were being made, they fell off to, you know, more mythological, more like action-packed masala films.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's not to say, like, there was no artistic films being made, obviously. The middle cinema of, like, Aparna Sen, Prabhat Roy, Rituparna Ghosh, they came out during this, like, tumultuous time of, like, the 80s and 90s. And they were, like, they were making films that called back to Satyajit Ray and that were just focused on middle-class issues and problems.
And sexuality and
mm-hmm.
Gender. Class, yeah, all that.
Good stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Post-2000s is interesting,
mm-hmm.
like where Bengali cinema sits right now.
Yeah, definitely. Because, like, as we mentioned earlier, the 90s was a time when Indian economy just opens up and mm-hmm. you just see, like, huge cash being flown in and you had just...
A lot of trade.
Yeah. And because of this, there's more corporate backing and new finances.
Mm-hmm.
And so they... Bengali commercial side began remaking more Bollywood films and like South Indian cinema, which are like the more masala film fairs.
There's a meme where there's like a guy throwing a baby in there and it's like Bollywood cinema, the baby is like, I don't know, maybe five feet something in the air, and then South Indian cinema it's like 10 feet in the air.
Yeah. So yeah.
Side note.
Exactly. So if you think like Bollywood cinema is too much, just watch the South Indian cinema. Like, Bollywood would feel like a like come down or like a relaxing.
Yeah, yeah, it feels down to earth compared to South Indian cinema.
For sure. But again, you still had like very interesting filmmakers coming out during the post 2000s era. The big one that I can think of is Kaushik Mukherjee, mm-hmm. who's known as Q. He's making like very interesting experimental films.
Like some about sexuality and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that's his full name.
Yeah.
And I didn't know he was Bengali. Wow. Okay. Yeah. This makes so much sense.
Makes a lot of sense. Yeah. A filmmaker that I've recently found out about, Vikram Aditya Sen Gupta.
Mm.
His films look really interesting. And
what is he?
He made a film called Jonika.
Okay.
It's like, I saw it on Netflix. It looks really interesting. It's like a woman looking back at her past life.
Oh.
And it's very like,
it looks very Bengali?
Surrealistic. Yeah, it's Bengali. Oh. So it looks very like surrealistic, but also very reminiscent of like magical realist
interesting style. Yeah.
So.
Like, I think the older, like, Satyajit Ray and,
mm-hmm.
Well, even, like, Q and stuff now, like, they're not just in Bengali cinema, but, like, we've talked about the worldwide impact of Satyajit Ray, like, Martin Scorsese mm-hmm. and Akira Kurosawa, those guys. But within India itself, like, we do have this, like, we've had parallel cinema, even this, like, new wave, I would say, happening right now. I think all of them can trace... Like, you can trace their steps back to Satyajit Ray being, like, the prolific filmmaker he was. Mm-hmm. For India, like I can think of Debakar Banerjee, Pritesh Batra, who made Lunchbox, mm-hmm. like all these kind of realism films, but like this Bollywood specifically. But I would argue they are influenced a lot by Satyajit Ray.
For sure. I think.
Actually, it's not even an argument. Yeah. I think I've read it in articles they've said they're
influenced. One filmmaker that always comes to my mind when it comes to Satyajit Ray and like praise and influence is Vishal Bhardwaj, who's most famous for making like the Indian Shakespeare trilogy of Haider, Makbul, and Omkara, and other films as well. He mentioned in an interview in like 2015, like India is the land of like Satyajit Ray and Mrinal Sen, yet we produce like garbage.
Yeah.
So you know, he definitely is looked at as like a very important filmmaker. And, you know, Vishal Bhardwaj's colleagues like Abhishek Chaubey, Debakar Banerjee, Zoya Akhtar, Anurag Kashyap, these are all filmmakers whose work is definitely influenced by Ray, and the influence is seen. And I think they are all like very hopeful of what Indian cinema can be and what they can aspire to be.
Yeah. Well, thanks for joining us for a chat about the history of Bengali cinema and Satyajit Ray and his, I guess, Bengali film's influence and Satyajit Ray's influence on modern day Indian cinema and the future of it. Again, check us out on YouTube at PKP Podcast. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter, PKP.podcast. Yeah. I believe. If you found this episode, you'll see the links below. Yeah. But yeah, catch us next month for our next episode. Thanks.
Bye.